So you've been walking around here like some arthritic, old, ancient woman.
Yeah, I have hardly been able to move the last couple of days because the girls and I this past weekend hiked with some friends all the way up Mulungi Mountain here in Malawi. It is I looked it up. It's the tallest in South Central Africa. I'm not really sure what that region entails, but
It really just depends on where you draw the lines because
yeah, but
the highest peaks are in Tanzania and Kenya and
right. But it
where's the
is,
borderline of South Central Africa?
yeah, but it is an enormous mountain to walk all the way up
Yeah.
on your own two legs.
Yeah, that's no joke.
It was absolutely no joke. We didn't go all the way to the peak, but it's so Mulungi is what they call an Inselberg,
Inselberg.
right, which means island in the sky.
Okay. In
And
German?
I don't know. I don't speak German.
Okay.
But so that just means that it's not part of a mountain range. It's flat, and then Mulungi is just like this huge kind of a plateau that sticks up off the flat ground.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a plateau at the top, although it's really kind of rolling hills still, even at the top. And it's got, actually, I think it has like 50 something peaks,
Yeah.
but it has obviously the one highest peak,
They also
Pitwa.
call it a massif. I thought that was, is that the same thing as an Inselberg or is that different?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. You're right. I
Yeah.
don't know what those
But
two words
anyways,
mean.
it's not like the Rocky Mountains or the Smoky Mountains. It's we're flat and then all of a sudden there's a mountain that comes up. And that's how most of our mountains in Malawi are.
Yeah, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it. But it was a short hike. It was only 3.75 miles to the hut that we stayed in over the weekend, but it was an elevation gain of almost 4,000 feet,
Yeah.
which means it was almost straight up the
Thir
entire time.
13 ladders, right? That you had to
Yeah.
climb.
Yeah, it was so steep that there were 13 places where they had to make ladders to help you get up.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I was here with the three boys, and we had like the totally opposite weekend from you. We just ate pizza and popcorn. We watched all three of the original Star Wars. You're off climbing a mountain, and we're just,
Vegging out, huh?
yeah. But it was fun. It was a good weekend for us too.
Yeah, it was really fun. The trip was great. I told it was one of the girl's friend's birthday weekend. It was what she wanted to do for her birthday, was do this trip with some of her friends. So it was me and three other adults and seven teenage girls and two little brothers. But it was really fun. I really enjoyed, I was surprised by how much I enjoyed hanging out with the teenage girls. Like, they're pretty cool, actually.
Good. We just had a guest come and go.
Yeah.
Zach was here. I think we mentioned him on the last podcast, actually.
Yeah, he was really fun to have around for just a week.
Yeah, so he came to teach pastors, and usually we do 2 weeks, but we had to cancel the school in the Lower Shiri due to the cyclone. But he still came and taught the pastors here in Zomba, and we had a little bit fewer than we usually have because of the time of year and some of the disaster-related stuff. But we still had 68 pastors, I think, and he taught preaching. And he just did an excellent, excellent job, just with a pastor's heart. And he was just such a joy to have here. And we got to hang out and
Yeah.
just one of those people that was a constantly looking for ways to encourage and bless us,
Yeah.
which is the type of guest that you want to have.
Yeah.
When you're a missionary, is somebody who's here to serve and here to be a blessing.
Right. Yeah, he was really great. You
Yeah.
guys got to catch up on a lot of people that you both know. And
yeah, it was like constantly just talking about, hey, do you know this person? So one of those things where we're just catching up, because we went to college together and there were people that he knew what had happened to them and I didn't. And
yeah,
you know how it is.
So the second week of the school that he was supposed to teach was canceled. You want to talk more about that?
Yeah, we thought about having it anyways, even though the cyclone had hit the lower Shiri really hard. But talking to the team, we decided that even the pastors that would come because they wanted the teaching, it just wasn't a good time for them to come, and that they would really be struggling just to be there and be focused. So we decided it was best to cancel that. But we still were able to take some of the gifts that people gave money towards. We gave them each a bucket, which is a super main tool that...
Very multi-purpose.
Multi-purpose tool, yeah. For building, for water. It's very...
Food storage, anything.
Yeah, they loved it. You know, they cheered to receive a bucket.
Yeah.
And plastic... sheets of plastic, we call it plastic paper here, but rolls of plastic,
right?
Black plastic, tarp, I guess you could say, but not that thick. And they use that if you have grass roofs, you put that under the grass roof to keep it waterproof, or like you cover a wall in the rain so that it protects it from getting soaked and falling down. And so that was really a practical tool. And then we replaced all their Bibles, because a lot of them had lost their Bibles in the flood. So we gave them Bibles and we gave them soap, which helps with some of the hygiene issues. So we were able to be a blessing to them. And it looks like most of them are going to make it through this disaster in one piece. It's not to minimize the hardships, but many of them have replanted their crops.
Really? And this late?
Well, I mean, they had plenty of time since January. So as long as there's not another flood or the rain doesn't stop early, which is a big if, they should have food. And then it's just a matter for most of them of finding the time and the sweat to rebuild their houses, because they... build them from mud. And so it's not a big investment. It's just the work of doing it. So, you know, there's obviously people that were worse hit than others. But in general, I think everybody's going to make it through this. So
great. And but the rains, we've already been getting less rain.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, this week hasn't been as rainy, but...
Last week it hardly rained at all, too.
Yeah, but, this is how rainy season can be. You can have a week of rain, and then you can have 2 weeks without.
Yeah.
And you start to worry, and then it comes again, so...
But this is the time of year for rainy season to start to be kind of petering out.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And around us, a lot of the corn is maturing. We're getting close to the time where Malawians will pick it while it's green. If they're running out of food, especially, they'll eat dowe, is what it's called, green corn, until it matures. So at least around Zamba, it looks good. But if you go out in some of the lower lying areas, it doesn't look as well. But it's going to be a mixed bag this year for a lot of Malawians. Some people really good, some people not so good.
So speaking of going out into other areas outside of our Zomba town, we'll be starting clinics again next month.
Yeah, so that's coming up quick. I think our first one is on the 4th of April. And so you and I will be taking turns taking the team out to the clinics and doing evangelism, and this will... all be happening probably before we have another podcast. So everybody listening can be praying for us and the clinic team and those preaching the gospel. It can be a pretty intense time. So
yeah. It's a lot of driving.
Yeah. A lot of driving, a lot of being out in the heat or humidity, more humidity this time of year.
Yeah.
And yeah. It can be tiring. Right now we have students back for Shepherd's Academy, the final term of Shepherd's Academy. And I'm teaching evangelism, which is a really fun class for me because usually I'm teaching, like my main classes are systematic theology. So it's fun to have a very practical class. It was a nice change up. And we're really having a good time going deep in the book of Romans with the students. And I was just preaching this morning from Romans chapter 7 about how we're free from the law. And it just really, I felt like some of the guys were kind of having their eyes open to grace and the significance of grace. So, and this will be, some of them, this will be their last term. They'll be doing their church planting project in June, and then they'll be graduating right before we go to America, Lord willing.
Yeah, which is coming up quickly.
Yeah.
About three months and a week or so.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
And we haven't even bought our plane tickets yet.
Nope.
Because we live in a strange, strange world where you can't really buy plane tickets too far in advance.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, we could buy plane tickets straight back to the U.S. if we wanted to right now, right?
Yeah, but even that, you know, it's just everything is still so uncertain.
Yeah.
Not just COVID, but then the wars, plural, the war in Ethiopia, the war in Ukraine. It's just really hard to plan what the world's going to be like in 3 months.
Yeah.
Which is insane when you reflect upon it.
Yeah. And I don't know if we mentioned this in the last podcast, but we're hoping to stop somewhere in Europe for a couple of days on the way back to the U.S. We found that buying separate tickets from here to Europe and then from Europe to the U.S. is often cheaper somehow than buying a ticket directly from here to the U.S. So why not take advantage of that and spend a couple of days somewhere cool?
And give the kids a break from such a long...
Yeah.
16, 14 hour flight.
Yeah, break that up a little bit. Not spend, you know, two whole days in airports and airplanes. Yeah. So we're hoping to do that, but we're having to keep a really close eye on all the COVID travel restrictions that are in different countries to know where we might be able to go.
Yeah.
I have lists upon lists upon lists of things to do before we get there and while we're there and before we come back. And I'm just so overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want to say a big thank you. So last month, I guess, I posted on Facebook a travel wish list of things that would make our trip back to the U.S. a little bit less miserable.
Yeah.
And our friend Zach, who came, brought those things with us, and we are just blown away by everyone's generosity. I thought a couple people might buy a couple of things on the list, and within 2 days the whole list had been bought up. And so we are just so thankful for everybody that bought off that list. And
yeah,
I'm so excited for the surprises that we have now for the kids on the way back.
Yeah, it'll make it a little bit more fun for them.
Yeah.
And give them something to entertain themselves with on the flights.
One of the big things was we got several boxes of like granola bars.
Yeah.
Which are hard to find here anyway, but you really can't find any gluten-free granola bars here. And so we had several different kinds of gluten-free granola bars, which I am so excited about.
Which you have to save.
Yeah.
You can't eat them all.
No, I've only eaten one.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. No, I haven't been dipping into the storage just once.
Okay. Well, I guess that's a good update, and let's just get ready to start this show.
Okay.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacy Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life Podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more. Well, we thought that in this episode, we'd kind of do something very different from what we have been doing. And everyone's mind is obviously on Eastern Europe and the war that is happening in the Ukraine. And even though we've never been to Ukraine ourselves, we did live in that part of the world for 2 years. And so we just thought it would be interesting and fun to kind of go down memory lane and remember our life in Eastern Europe and maybe, you know, give people more of a perspective on what things are like in that part of the world.
Yeah. So most of you who listen to the podcast probably already know, you probably have known us for a long time, but there may be some who haven't known us for so long.
Yeah.
But we lived in Moldova from 2009 to 2011. Jude was 6 months old when we went there, 2.5 when we came back.
And we were also very young.
We were babies too, yeah.
We were what, like 16 and 18 or something like that?
No, we were what, 23 and 25.
Yeah. We thought we were adults back then.
We did.
But now we look back on the pictures and think, wow.
Yeah.
You really had a lot to learn.
Yeah. But it was an incredible 2 years that we had there in Moldova. And we worked in Moldova with the same colleagues we work with here, Eric and Stephanie Chapman.
Which I did an interview with Eric a few months ago. And so we'll put that link in the show notes if you missed that. And he talks about his ministry in Moldova and his ministry and how he came here and started the work in Malawi. So that gives you that backstory. And it's very fascinating, the story that he tells of how God called him to Moldova and what it was like ministering there in the early days in the 1990s, right after the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, they have some fascinating stories from that time.
Yeah, so if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, then you really need to go back and listen to it. But today, we're not really talking about, you know, as experts or lifelong people who spent our lives there, but just, you know, reminiscing on 2 years that were very important and formative in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And we lived while we were there at a camp. So Eric and Stephanie have two camp properties that they do ministry at there in Moldova. And we lived at the larger one in central Moldova. And that camp right now is taking in refugees from Ukraine.
Yeah, so a lot of refugees coming across the borders into Moldova. And using Moldova then to go further into Western Europe.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah. And so they are taking about 100, I think, at a time.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are moving through. So they'll be there a few days and then they'll go further to the west.
Yeah. And Eric and Stephanie are there right now helping the Moldovan staff at the camp. And
yeah.
They said they usually have school this time of year, but they've canceled classes and most of the students have stayed to help the refugees as well.
Yeah.
And they and another old colleague who runs the camp now, Mihai, they've been posting a lot of things on Facebook.
Are you calling Mihai old?
No, I meant one of our...
Okay.
A guy that we worked with when we were there too.
Okay.
Not old.
All right.
Anyway, they've all been posting things on Facebook about how, you know, local people around the camp have been donating tons of blankets and clothes and food and all kinds of things to help support the refugees.
And they're doing that in uncertainty themselves because there have been indications that after Russia checks Ukraine off the list, which is apparently harder to do than Putin was probably expecting. They're coming for Moldova.
Yeah, Moldova could very well be next.
And even there was a map of the battle plan that the Belarusian president Lukashenko was in front of, and somebody took a picture of it and it went public and it showed arrows going from Ukraine into Moldova. So they're really, I think Eric said, I talked to him on the phone yesterday, and he said every Moldovan has their bags packed already.
Really?
Yeah. So they're serving others while also preparing for the worst themselves.
Yeah. I've been so impressed and proud of the Moldovan church in all of this. They have organized systems to have people pick people up at the border and bring them to homes and places where they can find refuge. They've got a huge network of people welcoming them into their homes and all kinds of things. It's been really incredible to see the way they've stepped up.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been so long since we lived in Moldova. I mean, how long is that? I can't do math.
11 years since we left.
11 years. So, I mean, so much has changed. And from the people I've talked to, they've told me, you know, the town you used to live in, you wouldn't even recognize it. There's so many new things and an amusement park or something like that, fairgrounds or something.
In Orhe.
Yeah.
Wow.
All kinds of development that has happened since we've been there. But so, you know, everything we say, maybe just take it with a grain of salt because we're remembering the way things used to be 11 years ago.
Right.
But I think the beauty and the great things about the culture, hopefully they're staying intact and staying the same.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. You loved it.
I absolutely loved it.
I mean, yeah. I liked it, but you know, you loved living in Moldova.
I did. I don't know, everything about it I loved. I loved the language. I loved the people. I loved the culture. I loved the landscape.
That was a lot of things.
It's pretty much, yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I loved going to the market and practicing my Romanian. I loved hanging out with the students at camp during school. I loved just hanging out on the camp property with Jude as a toddler, you know, and playing on the slides and running around in the grass and him getting to play with all the students. I loved how much the students loved Jude. Remember, they played with him all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was just a really, really special time.
Yeah.
For our family.
Yeah. And it was a lot like, just the environment is a lot like places in the United States with the forests and, you know, the geography of it, you know, the rivers and the forests and things.
Yeah.
It's not such a drastic difference as, you know, Malawi to the United States. You know, the big difference for us was all the snow we had.
Yeah. The weather wasn't that much different from Kentucky, but probably similar to just a little bit farther south or north. I mean,
yeah.
But I loved that almost pretty much all winter there was snow on the ground and it was just so beautiful. And we'd just bundle Jude up and go outside anyway. And, it was just fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a different experience because we're used to snow coming and staying for 2 or 3 days and then being a muddy, nasty mess. But, and it did become a muddy, nasty mess.
In the spring, mostly.
But, you know, most of the time when the snow was around, it was just beautiful. But in the summer, Moldova was yellow. It was summer, late fall. You don't know what I'm talking about.
Are you talking about the sunflowers?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. They had, Moldova does a lot of sunflower oil. Mm-hmm. And so they just have vast fields of sunflowers that are so gorgeous.
Yeah.
we stopped and took pictures in a sunflower field when our parents were visiting. Well, your parents and my mom and your sister were there. And those pictures are still really special to us.
Yeah. I miss the food probably most of all.
Yeah.
That was something that was very special about being a missionary to Moldova. In Malawi, we, you know, you don't come to Malawi for the food.
No.
You know, we have great fruit, fresh, you know, tropical fruits and stuff. But
good fresh vegetables year round. You know,
there's just not a food culture in much of Africa. But the food in Moldova was great. And we still cook some things that we learned to cook in Moldova.
We do. We do green beans the way that we loved at a certain restaurant that we visited often.
So more fried with onions instead of, you know, kind of the boiled green beans that probably most people are used to in the U.S.
Yeah. And the beet salad.
Yeah.
I love beet salad. It's so messy to make, but because you have to grate the beets and you get the beet juice stains all over your hands and your cutting board, but I love it. We've served it for several guests, and I feel like it's one of those things you either love or hate.
Yeah. And, you know, some people don't like beets, but then it's a lot of garlic. All the food is a lot of garlic.
So much garlic.
Which is supposed to keep you healthy.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're not used to it, I'm sure it can be a little overwhelming, but we're very used to it. So I know that we've had guests over and we've cooked things for them and they didn't eat very much. And I think it was probably the garlic was a little too much for them.
Maybe, but we don't even, if we don't have a ton of garlic in it, then we hardly taste it.
Yeah. you know, beet borscht is a big thing, and any kinds of soups and stuff, and the bread.
Yeah.
It's the land of bread. So here, you know, we eat sema, is the food that is the filling food. But there it's bread, and the loaves are fresh from the bakery. And back then, how much was a loaf of bread?
Like 12 cents.
Yeah, 12 cents or something like that. And it was the type of bread that was hard crusted on the outside that you sliced yourself. Like you buy this same type of bread at Panera in America for $12 or something.
Yeah.
And we could get it for 12 cents and it was just amazing.
And that was, you got kind of emotional in the bread aisle when we moved back to the US.
Yeah, because we were at your hometown and we were in your little grocery store. It wasn't Kroger or Walmart or anything even. It's just the little grocery store, and we needed bread. And I was looking at all these soft, you know, who sliced. Knows how old it had been on the shelf, you know, sliced bread. And it was just, it was very, very sad that I was not, I was not in the place where I was used to very, very good bread all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the things you put on the bread is part of the, is part of it, you know, good butter and homemade jams and, they used to make at camp this eggplant paste.
Oh, yeah.
That you spread on the bread. And it was just so, of course, it has garlic in it, eggplant and garlic.
Of course.
And it was so good.
Wouldn't the students just eat a whole garlic clove with a little bit of bread?
Yeah. They'd just grab a garlic clove and they'd dip it in like a plate that had salt in it and just cake the salt on it and then take a bite and put some more salt. And, you know, that's supposed to be for your immune system too.
Yeah. Which I think really is a legitimate thing.
Yeah.
It really does work.
We were there with, what flu was that? That
broke, swine flu.
Swine flu broke out while we were there. And the Moldovan military was beefing up their soldiers on garlic and onions to fight the swine flu. So
Yeah. I remember you told the guy students one time, the girls aren't going to like you if you keep eating all this raw garlic. And you remember what they said?
They said something like, no, they like us when we eat more garlic or something like that.
I thought they said the girls eat more garlic than we do.
Oh, they did say that. They did say that.
And you could smell it on people. Like when you eat that much garlic, it comes out your pores.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all smelled like garlic all the time.
Yep. But, you know, there were fewer vampires coming over from Romania, I guess, because of all the garlic.
That's true.
In the sweets, the baked.
The placenta.
Desserts. Yes, placenta, which if you're American, looks like placenta.
But it's not.
Is how, you know, it's spelled, but it's not pronounced that way. It's placenta.
Yeah.
Very different from placenta.
Very different. it's like a the crust, so it's rolled out really thin. It's kind of like a phyllo dough crust, and you can put a lot of different things in placenta, but my favorite was the apple butter.
Yeah.
But she would, what else would they put in it?
Well, a lot of times it was homemade cheeses.
Oh, brinza.
Like a soft white cheese. You could put potatoes in it. You could put, even meats in it. And then all kinds of jams and fruits and things.
Yeah. But Sylvia at the camp, she did them often with the apple butter in them. Yeah. And those were amazing.
Yep. Yeah. You can't eat them now because you're now gluten-free.
But I tell you, if I went back, I would eat them anyway.
Yeah.
Because I miss them so much.
Yeah.
I tried to make them myself when we got back to the U.S., but it is a true skill to get the dough that thin without ripping it. Mm-hmm. And so mine just didn't turn out anything like Sylvia's.
Yeah.
But they're so good. But I've actually been reviewing Romanian on Duolingo for the last couple of months.
And for those who don't know, in Moldova, there are two languages, Russian and Romanian. And Russian tends to be more in the urban areas. And Romanian, which is a Moldovan dialect of Romanian.
Yes.
And in the Soviet Union, because Romania wasn't in the USSR, to kind of keep Moldova feeling separate from Romania, they actually called the language Moldovan, but it's so close to Romanian. It's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really just a few words here and there that are different, mostly.
And sometimes people will mix Russian and Romanian and put Russian endings on Romanian words or vice versa and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's almost like a Creole kind of mix, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So we learned Romanian while we were there, and we would try to go out into the village and talk to people. And we didn't think we were learning the language very well because we couldn't understand people very well. But then we went on a trip to Romania and we realized, oh, we really do understand Romanian.
Yeah, wait a second. I can understand what you're saying and you can understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is a revelation, but.
But we didn't understand the mixed with Russian that a lot of people spoke in Moldova.
Yeah, our teacher would always say, I'm teaching you Limba Romana Frumosa. Did I say that right?
Frumoasa.
Frumoasa. It's been a long time. Beautiful Romanian language.
Yeah, which she was very.
The classic Romanian language.
Yeah, she was very strict about proper Romanian.
Yeah, but that didn't help us too much out in the village where people were doing all kinds of crazy things, not according to the book.
Yeah, it would be like somebody learning British English, but then living out in rural Eastern Kentucky or somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
They would not understand a lot of what was going on.
Yeah, but you've been reviewing and kind of reminiscing, huh?
Yeah, so that reminded me of one of my biggest beefs, speaking of placenta, is that all of the official translator things translate placenta as pie. And I don't know why I let it bother me so much, but it annoys me so much because I mean, if you know what pi is.
Well, pi in America, like, to us, pi is in that circular pan, and you put,
it's like, you know, a crust with the, yeah, filling.
With apples. You know what a pie is.
Right.
But
placenta is like a pastry.
Yeah.
If but, I were going to translate it, British, I would call it pastry.
I think the British have pies that are similar, and they use the word pie.
Is that it?
I think so. You know, they have like these little snack pastries that have different things in them.
Mm, that's true. Oh, you know, the like apple pies and cherry pies that you can get at McDonald's or...
Yeah. Or even at the
things.
Gas station.
Yeah.
That would be close. That's somewhat.
Somewhat close to what placenta is like. Yeah. But it's not a pie. I would call it a pastry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that just has always annoyed me.
Well, now you've told the world what was on your heart.
I have.
Yeah, we could go on and on about the food. But the food was just so much a part of the culture because it was an agriculture-based based culture.
Yeah.
Everything that we experienced was so closely tied to the land and agriculture and the seasons. You know, I used to tell people it's like if you went back to when our grandparents were children.
Yeah.
What the United States was like, or Kentucky at least was like,
yeah,
back then. That's what it was like living in Moldova. And there were negatives to that.
Uh-huh.
There was poverty. There were lack of opportunity, lack of jobs, and that kind of thing. But there were definite positives to it,
yeah,
as well. And it just was a beautiful thing to be able to, you know, you said going to the market, to be able to go to the market to buy things that were locally grown and produced, to buy animals that had just been killed that day.
Yeah. To buy really good, cheap eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fresh.
And all kinds of eggs.
Duck eggs were our favorite. They have so much flavor and they're so big.
Yeah, but we also would buy goose eggs sometimes and all kinds of, I think you even got
tiny little quail eggs to try. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was something that was just, it was, you know, if you have something in your soul, I think if you're a Kentuckian who you just are drawn to that culture that we have and are losing that's tied to our agriculture.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that Moldova is kind of on a similar trajectory, and maybe there's been a lot of changes in the last 11 years, but back then it was still very strongly connected to locally produced things, agriculture, you know, people making their own cheese, people making canning and doing those kinds of things.
Oh, compote.
Yeah.
Remember?
Compote was something that you drank.
Uh-huh.
Not to be confused with how we use the word in English, which is like a fruit chutney.
Is it?
Is a compote.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen it in like Betty Crocker or something, cookbook or something, used that way.
But compote was a way that they preserve the fruits. The fruit harvest.
Yeah.
And they would have these big jugs. And somebody gave us 3 huge jugs of compote one time when you visited a church.
I preached at a church, and that was part of what they gave me as a gift was they gave me a lot of things, but those jugs of compote.
And I think you just boiled the fruit and sugar in water, right? Yeah,
I think so. And then you just seal it up and you have your vitamins and things for the winter.
Yeah.
Where you can just drink this. And it was important to have those things because it's a local, you know, agricultural economy. If you didn't, then you're not getting the nutrients and stuff that you need in the wintertime.
Yeah.
So it was very tastes good and good for you. Except for probably the sugar, but you know, we'll overlook that part.
Yeah, but you know how much less sugar they were eating, even with sugar in their compote and stuff, than the standard American diet. Yeah. Yeah. It's just worlds different.
Yeah.
And you know, even at church, they obviously don't celebrate Thanksgiving because that's an American thing, but we did have a harvest
Sunday or something
celebration.
Like that.
They decorated the church with fresh fruit and vegetables and vines and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they would thank God for the harvest.
Yeah. And then we would have a fellowship meal after the Sunday morning service.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what else about church in Moldova?
Well, the churches that we went to anyway, I don't think any of the churches we ever visited had heat in the buildings, did they?
Maybe some of them had a little bit, but was struggling to keep up with the bigger space if it was a big building.
I just remember at church in the winter, we just didn't take our coats off.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. We always stood to pray. That was something that I had to get in the habit of not doing when we came back to the U.S. because it really got ingrained in you. It's time to pray. You stand.
Yeah. I don't remember a lot of that because I was chasing toddler Jude for most of the Sunday services. So that didn't make it into my memory.
Yeah. No, that was ingrained in me for a while. And, you know, still sometimes I think about it while I'm in worship and you're sitting and praying. I think, oh, I used to stand to pray.
Yeah. Speaking of me chasing toddler Jude, there were no children's church or anything to watch your little kids for you so you could enjoy the sermon.
Which is the way it is around most of the world.
Right. Same here. But that was one of the few things that I was really happy to get back to in America. particularly because Jude was such an active toddler and child.
Yep.
He wasn't one, you know, with his autism that we discovered later. He was never one, even as an infant, to just let me sit through a church service.
Yeah.
I think I sat through one church service his whole infancy and toddlerhood that he actually fell asleep.
Yeah.
But besides that, I was always out of the sanctuary chasing him or, you know, rocking him, trying to get him to sleep or whatever.
Yeah.
That was really tough.
Yeah. We discovered while we lived in Moldova, our favorite musical.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was mentioned to us that we were living in Fiddler on the Roof and we had never watched Fiddler on the Roof. So we watched it and found out that actually we were kind of living in Anatevka.
Yeah.
And, you know, the
Eric and Stephanie loaned it to us to watch and we really fell in love with
it. The only difference was that there were some cars in the village, but there were also still lots of carts with horses.
Yeah. And there wasn't the Jewish thing in Moldova that there was in Fiddler on the Roof. But as far as the village life and all of that, it was very, very similar. Mm-hmm. And we still love that.
Yeah.
Love it so much.
You know, and that Fiddler on the Roof is actually taking place in what today is Ukraine.
You
know, the similarities between so many of those nations. You know, that's why, you know, we feel a special kind of, you know, our hearts go out so much to the people in Ukraine because there's differences, but they're really similar culturally as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the best comparisons, and this kind of explains to a degree what is happening, is that, you know, you think as an outsider, oh, Irish, Scottish, Welsh, English, okay, they're all just really kind of the same. But then when you really look, there are significant differences in the cultures, even though they're very close to one another.
Yeah.
You know, like they're so much closer to one another than, say, you know, an African culture to English.
Right.
So, you know, where those dividing lines should be has always been part of the historical issues in Europe. And so that's what's happening there, is that there's these cultures, and Putin says, no, we're all Russians. And the Ukrainians are saying, no, we're actually not Russians. We're different from you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from one perspective, it can be flattened out because it's so close. But from another perspective, there are significant differences and historical differences and cultural differences that need to be preserved. And anyways, that's going down kind of the
no, it's good,
the wormhole.
I just remembered, though, speaking of food and Ukraine.
Okay, I reminded you of food by talking about all of that.
Well, I just remembered our favorite Ukrainian food in Moldova.
What was that?
The ketchup.
Oh, yes.
Remember?
Yes, I forgot that was Ukrainian.
It was. There was this amazing Ukrainian brand of ketchup in Moldova that we loved so much.
Yeah, and we actually brought back, it was in a bag, not a bottle, but what do they call those bags? Oh, the sealed bags, you know?
Yeah.
And we brought that back with us in our luggage.
Yeah.
And it had a cinnamon flavor to it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was just really good. Mm-hmm. Chim or something.
Yeah, it was in Cyrillic letters, so I never quite figured out what it was. But you learned Cyrillic a little bit better than me because you did so much grocery shopping, and our food in the grocery store would either come from Germany or Russia.
Yeah.
And the stuff from Russia was in Cyrillic. So if you're looking at the spices, you had to decipher the different letters. I mean, it would still be paprika, but it would be in Cyrillic letters.
I didn't really learn but a couple of words in Russian, but a lot of, if you learn how to pronounce, like how to sound out the letters, most of it, yeah, is the same word, but in Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah.
Which, you know what that reminds me of?
Uh-oh, what?
When you had a toothache.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't a toothache. It was a sore in my mouth.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So the pharmacies here in Malawi actually work the same way as they did in Moldova. You don't need a prescription for most things from the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And so one day Josh was having this sore in his mouth and he wanted some like...
Or a gel
kind of stuff to help it not hurt. And so I go to the pharmacy with my, you know, toddler level Romanian skills. And I'm trying to communicate, you know, my husband, he has pain in his mouth. And so they give me this little bottle of...
A vial. Like you could put a needle in and draw this stuff out with.
Yeah. So they give me this and they say, you know, tell him to just put some on his finger and put it in his mouth and that will numb the pain. So we get it home and he tries it. And then I start looking at the Cyrillic letters on the bottle and I'm sounding out Novocaine. And I was like, this is Novocaine, just straight Novocaine that they're telling you to put.
And it worked. It really did. I just dab a little bit on my finger and put it on the sore and I didn't feel anything after that.
Yeah.
Speaking of health, that was one of the funniest areas of our life there. And we would just always joke with the students and the people we worked with because they had so many superstitions surrounding health.
Yes.
The first day we were in Moldova, jet lagged, have a 6-month-old. We are buying everything for our apartment, refrigerator, washing machine, food.
Yeah.
Everything. It was a crazy day. And we were in this store, which is kind of like a Sam's Club. What was that store called? Metro.
Metro.
I think it's a German store. But so we were in that store, and you were buying things, and I was just trying to keep Jude happy, and he was exhausted. So I was holding his hands and letting him walk around on the ground. You know, he's 6 months old, but I'm just kind of letting him totter around while holding my hands. And the floor is just a concrete floor. And he doesn't have any socks on or anything.
Or shoes.
And a woman comes up to me and starts chewing me out in Russian or Romanian. I didn't know which one it was at that point, because it was just the first day there. I didn't have a clue what was going on. And Eric comes up and says something to her in Russian. It ends up, he told me, he said something like, "Oh, he's just an American. Don't worry about him. He doesn't know what he's doing." But she thought I was killing Jude, because his bare feet were touching the cold concrete, and he was going to get sick. And
yeah, you don't do that.
Anything cold can make you sick.
We had a backpack style carrier for Jude. And anytime I went to the market or something, I would have him on my back, and I would constantly get scolded by Russian babushkas, grandmothers, for not having socks and shoes on him, or not having him bundled appropriately, or not having a hat on him. That was one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
If you got wind in your ears, then you would get sick. And so if it got below about 70 degrees, then kids especially had to have hats with their ears covered.
Yeah. Or if there was a breeze coming through the room, you know, if you were in the classroom and it was hot in August, you could have the windows open, but you couldn't have the door open. Or you could have the door open and you couldn't have the windows open, because once you allowed there to be a route for the breeze to blow through the building, then everybody thought they were going to die.
Yeah.
So it was awful, because, you know, everybody's sitting in there sweating and miserable, but you can't let the breeze come through the classroom. Girls couldn't sit on concrete, cold concrete, because they would become sterile.
But they could put something as thin as newspaper down on the concrete and sit on that, and that was fine.
Yeah, and anytime we would get in discussions about these superstitions, they would just tell us, "Oh, you're Americans. You're just stronger than we are. Those things don't bother you, but we know they bother us."
Yeah. I got in so much trouble for Jude. I think the students just finally kind of came to the conclusion that Americans don't get sick as easily as Moldovans do. Remember, letting him play in mud puddles in the spring was a big issue. All the students would walk by and be just horrified.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, it's okay. He's an American.
You know, so many of our students that we had during those 2 years, you know, they have babies of their own. They're married. And many of them are still in Moldova, but others have immigrated to Western Europe or the United States. And there's so many of them that are still serving the Lord in their local churches or even in ministry somehow in Moldova. And that was the best part of everything that we did there, was being involved in their lives. And even, you know, we have one student that gives to Gospel Life and supports us being here. So
yeah.
It just is such a blessing to be involved in those lives. And, you know, we weren't much older than them at the time.
Yeah.
And so it was a fun time to be involved in their education and training for ministry.
It was. I'm still friends on Facebook with several of them, and it's just been so fun to watch them grow into adults and their family lives and the things that they've done for the Lord.
But you can just keep praying for the Ukrainians and the Moldovans and the Russians, as this is just a horrible situation that didn't have to be.
Yeah.
It just really did not have to be this way. And there are so many lives that are just being upended and completely destroyed by this. But it's also a time where there's an opportunity for the gospel to shine. And that's what our, you know, colleagues and friends in Moldova are trying to do by helping refugees with their physical needs, but also trying to meet their spiritual needs as well. So we just pray that the war comes to an end quickly and it doesn't spread. But at the same time that the Lord uses this for His glory.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.